It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host, bringing you the best of the best of the best in golf and golf lifestyle week after week after week after week. This week, I am stoked because we have a couple of very special, special guests. The guests are always special, right? But these are special with maybe a capital S, capital L, and maybe little italics too. Joining me in an exclusive interview that was taken live this week from the opening of his new store, PXG store, here in the Washington, D.C. area, none other than the founder of GoDaddy and PXG Golf, Mr. Bob Parsons. I got a chance to sit down again for an exclusive one-on-one interview with him talking about his path in golf, the ascendance, the rocket-like ascendance of PXG to the very top of the golf industry, and what he has planned for the future. It was very, very cool to talk to this guy. I mean, this is someone who has made a mark on society and culture in general with how he's made the internet available and affordable for so many people. And now the approach that he's taken to golf through PXG is a different thing, a cool thing. And I love it because it's sort of outside the box in terms of how he thinks about everything, really, but about golf in particular in this case. So again, exclusive, special one-on-one conversation with Bob Parsons. You don't want to miss it. Also in this episode, we have Adil Yang. And Adil is the CEO, founder and CEO of Drivebox. That's Drive with a Y. And Drivebox is literally going to change not only how we play golf, but where we play golf. And you'll understand that statement a little more when you hear the segment. But this guy is definitely in that category of innovators in the same way that Parsons is innovating in the golf world. And God almighty, we need so much more of that creative thinking in this golf thing. So Adil Yang, the Bob Parsons, it's going to be a great show. You don't want to miss it. So before we get to that, though, I want to spend just a couple of minutes, if that, talking about this Saudi golf tour, okay? This thing with Greg Norman, and I've sort of shied away from that, you know, because everybody has pretty much said what they're going to say, and people have made their feelings known. I think I have too on this show, but I got to come back to it because there was a report of a statement that that Norman made recently, and Mark Schlebach of ESPN reports the LIV Live Golf Invitational Series has attempted to clarify CEO Greg Norman's comments that referred to the Saudi Arabian monarchy's alleged involvement in the death of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi as a, quote, mistake, a remark that drew widespread criticism, including from Khashoggi's fiance. On Wednesday, during a news conference in London to promote Live Golf's first event at Centurion Club, June 9th through 11th, coming up, Norman was asked about Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman's alleged complicity in the 2018 killing of Khashoggi, an American citizen. That new golf tour is being financed by Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, which is controlled by bin Salman. Quotes, from what I heard and what you guys reported, just take ownership of it, of what it is, Norman told reporters. Take ownership, no matter what it is. Look, we've all made mistakes. And you just want to learn from those mistakes and how you can correct them going forward. Khashoggi was killed inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, October 2018. Saudi Crown Prince has denied involvement in the killing, even though, and I'm saying now that's the end of the story, I will say now multiple investigations have concluded the obvious, which is that killing was actually done in that embassy and was, in fact, ordered by bin Salman. Done. So let me just express a few things here, okay, really quickly, and we'll get on with the show, because I don't want to, no, I do want to, we're going to do this. So let's just start with the tour as an idea, the whole thing about it. Okay, we want to have a new tour that's being constructed on a bunch of courses that nobody knows, with a bunch of players, not even a bunch of players, a few players that people know but aren't the top players in the world, Some names that people know, I guess the best known name is Phil Mickelson, who really wants to go and do this thing on a regular basis. And Greg Norman, I know if he wants to play in his own Super Tour, but maybe he does want to do that. We've got a few guys who want to go. And what's their primary reason for wanting to setting this thing up? The primary reason that we're supposed to care about this is they feel they don't make enough money. They feel they don't make enough money. Okay? We got guys out here who have not won, who've made millions of dollars in their tour career. You've got Sergio Garcia, who's made hundreds of millions of dollars in winnings and endorsements. Okay, he has lived like a freaking prince, and he's salty with the tour because he doesn't make enough money. Greg Norman hasn't flown in a commercial jet, okay, in the last 25 years. And yet he feels that he's not making enough money. So whether he is making as much as he can or these guys are making as much as they possibly could is not the issue. They feel that the reason it's compelling for us, for me, to watch them and a few other guys play on mid-level courses that I have no emotional attached to, that have no history attached to them, and say the reason I'm supposed to watch that is because they don't make enough money and we should watch that. Get another story. Not good enough. Okay? Not good enough. It's not a reason for me to watch. Matter of fact, you're making as much money now. How are you compelling other people to watch? Look at the ratings on the PGA Tour. Still, the only guy who moves the needle on ratings is, wait for it, Tiger. Okay? He's still the only guy. And you think now that going to worse golf courses and having yourself televised and available on YouTube is going to make this more palatable? What are you thinking? Okay, so it's just the whole business idea, the whole premise of it as entertainment that's kind of like dumbass to me. And then you have the idea of the morality of it. Let's just put it out there, the morality of the whole thing. Because you have not perfect people who are running sports events of all kinds. Okay, could you look at the guys in the NFL owners? I'd say if you're trying to pick 32 of the worst people in America, you could get a good head start, okay, by starting with the NFL owners. They're not great people. They're not. They're just not. But you look at what's being done with this tour and intentionally setting it up with a guy who is using it clearly to sports wash the reputation of his murdering regime. Okay? This is what it's for. Now, there's a quote somewhere in here where I think that a spokesperson for the tour, Live Golf, issued a statement and says, trying to cover up, again, for Greg Norman's foolishness. And we'll come back to Greg Norman individually, okay? The tour says, the killing of Jamal Khashoggi was reprehensible. Everyone agrees on that, including Greg, as he has said as such previously on many occasions. Haven't heard that. Greg also knows that golf is a force for good around the world and can help make inroads towards positive change. That is why he's so excited about LIV and the point that he was making. Okay, let's get a couple of things straight. Number one, golf is not a force for good. Good people are a force for good. Golf is a stupid game. Okay, I love golf, but let's be clear about what it is. It's a game. It is not a force for good. Good people are a force for good. And when bad people try to use golf to cover up for their bullshit, okay, it's not a force for good. It's just a shield they can hide behind, a screen where they can try to obfuscate for their garbage. Okay, golf is not inherently a force for good. Let's get that out there right now. Greg Norman is not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. Just isn't. That's the way I feel about it. I've had him on the show. He knows me. I know him. We're not buddies or anything. He's okay with it. But I would say with it, even if we were friends, if we're friends close, it's like, dude, man, you need to stop talking. You need to stop talking. You need to reconsider. Okay. I am a political journalist. I would working with colleagues of Jamal Khashoggi. I was doing radio at the time when he was murdered. And I know that if I was doing coverage, I could have been that person. Any reporter could have been that person who was following up and reporting on the Saudi regime. They could have you killed. This is what they do. And to say that this is a mistake, they never said it was a mistake. They deny it. So let's move on and pretend it didn't happen. You can do that. See how it works out for you. For what? For the sake of some money? Phil Mickelson said the same thing. You know, sometimes we gotta work with certain people. Really? You do. I don't. Okay? I'm not interested. And again, we're all somewhat hypocrites. Because again, there are horrible people running a lot of institutions in our life, and we don't shut down all of them. But when we have a choice right from the beginning to get something that's not only a dodgy and dubious product, even on its face as an entertainment deal, but other than that, the foundations of it are built on and for the benefit of people who are clearly not stellar people. They're not people that you want to have involved with something that is meant to be for good. I mean, the next, what it's going to be, their kids tour, and you know how they do like their first tea of Saudi and the whole thing. I'm not going for it. I don't want it. So I guess my wrap on this thing is that, look, as an idea, I think it's weak. I don't want to see a few good players playing a few okay courses, again, that I have no connection to. It's a bad idea as a television show. Okay, it's a bad idea as a business. Who does it benefit? A few guys who already make a crap load of money to make an even larger crap load of money? That's supposed to be the compelling reason that I should be for these guys? And anything else? But at the end of the day, when you can't even admit to the moral weakness, the moral conundrum that is there, the moral conflict, just admit it. Don't try to cover it up. Either you're too ignorant to see it or too greedy to care about it. Can't be both. You can't, or it could be both. It could be both. So we'll see how this thing turns out. Glad the tour denied. People do that. You know, it's like, you know, you want to play your tour? Go join that tour full time. Do your thing. You know, go with God. But you play this tour, you're on this tour. Done. I love it. And I heard someone say this week a very smart take, which is that what's really happening is that the majors will be even more strong and compelling than ever. Because the majors are not going to have any of this stuff. So the major championships will be even more compelling if you have multiple tours. Because that's the only place you're going to see the best players in the world playing on the best courses, is in the major championships. So the strong will get stronger as this thing goes through. These other tours, the dilution of competition and the dilution of the tracks. This isn't tennis, you know. It isn't a court is a court is a court. It makes a difference about where tournaments are held. So all of this to me boils down to a few things. The strength of the idea, which is zero. I think it's about a 1 out of 100. The compelling nature of it, again, 1 out of 100. And the lack of character of people. When people say that golf is a force for good, and then you say that you want to do this, you think that these golf guys are going to change them? You think all of a sudden at some tournament, somebody's going to announce, you know, actually we did do wrong by killing Jamal Khashoggi. You think that's the good that's going to happen? You think you're going to stop murdering people? Think women's rights are going to change because of this golf tour? You better read the rest of your newspaper, other than the scores from this week. You better read the rest of your newspaper before you take that tack. Before you take it with me anyway. Because I'll tell you what's the truth. I'll tell you. All right. So we'll take a quick break. And we'll be back with the one and only Bob Parsons of GoDaddy and PXG, talking live from his new store here in Fairfax, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. And Adil Yang of Drivebox. He's got a great idea, well executed. And you're going to want to hear about it. So get yourself comfortable. Get a crunchy snack and a beverage, and we'll be right back. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And as you guys know, I am always on the lookout for you for what is new, exciting, different, and I think special in golf. And it's kind of cool to me that golf has begun to expand the meaning of what golf is. As a matter of fact, golf didn't do that. It's the people who want to pick up a golf club and hit a golf ball, who have expanded that thing. So what used to be just a very sort of strict thing about green grass and how you dress and where it is and that sort of thing has now been redefined, or is in the process of being redefined, by a bunch of entrepreneurs and forward-thinking people. And I am so glad to see these folks on the horizon. You've seen it coming for a while now with Topgolf, and now it's expanding into many other different platforms. And joining me today is a guy who is a co-founder and CEO of a company called Drivebox, which is dedicated to bringing the most fun, most accessible golf experience, I think, that's in the market. Please welcome Adil Yang, again, CEO and co-founder of Drivebox. Adil, thanks, and welcome to the 19th hole.
Thank you, Michael. Really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And again, I heard about Drivebox from a mutual friend, and then I went and checked it out on the website. And so I'll tell you, honestly, the two thoughts that came to mind. The first was, I want to go do this. And the second one is, I want to go invest in this, because the whole thing seems like it's screaming to me like fun and ground floor investment is what I'm seeing on this thing. But, you know, that's just my reaction. Why don't you have the words for this? Why don't you tell us about what Drivebox is and what its mission is in your mind?
Yes, happy to. So Drivebox is actually a pretty simple concept. We put golf in a trailer, and so that we can deliver it to people anywhere they are. So our whole mission is to expand accessibility for the game, grow the game, but also there's a big social mission too, which is diversify the game, where you know, neighborhoods or places where they just don't have access to golf can now experience it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And again, so we're going to get into that into a minute too, that accessibility thing. That's huge to me. So we'll come to that in a minute. What made you think of this idea? Talk to me about the creative process and when the penny dropped that this is something that you definitely want to do, because I see it as a confluence of several different technologies becoming affordable and accessible enough to put it together and create this product. But you tell me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to tell you both the kind of origin story, which is really funny, but also where the passion, the mission came about. So I'm a pretty new golfer, and I didn't grow up being exposed to golf at all. You know, I'm a Chinese American. My parents weren't big into golf, and I didn't grow up in that environment. So I never even picked up a golf club until maybe once or twice messing around with friends, like in college. And then more recently, about 3 years ago, I had just sold my last company, and I said, well, I wanted to get into this sport because it seems kind of fun. And I have a younger brother I'm very competitive with him, anything sports. So he started picking up golf, and I said, oh man, I have to learn golf now. So, and then I was faced with the challenge of, man, this is a tough sport to learn. Like any other sport, I feel like, you know, I'm decently athletic. I could pick up pretty easily, but I struggled with golf. But I'm a pretty addictive personality kind of person. So I went to the driving range every day, binge watch YouTube golf videos, and just try to like self-teach, and eventually, you know, found my groove and started getting better. And then the pandemic hit, and I said, wow, you know, like the first like 3 months, you know, everything was kind of shut down, and I kind of panicked. I was like, I need to keep working at this or I'm going to lose all the progress that I've made so far. And so the idea came about, I wanted to put a simulator in my own home just to continue to practice and be able to use it. But I live in San Francisco, and it's a very expensive investment to put a simulator in your own home. On top of that, my wife was like, absolutely no. So half jokingly, but also sort of intrigued, I was like, well, we've got this place outside of our house that you could park, you know, a vehicle, a big trailer. And I said, well, what if I could put a simulator set up in a trailer? Then I could use it myself. At first, it was just a selfish project. But then, you know, the more I thought about it, the entrepreneurial bug kind of started saying, well, you could, if this works, we could be bringing this to friends and others and everyone can use it. So it's not just an investment for my own improvement, it could be for others as well. And I happened to have a little extra time on my hand during the pandemic, so I just started tinkering. So I got a trailer, I tried to outfit, you know, a whole simulator in there, and the prototype was very ugly. It was just to prove to myself that it could be done. And, you know, as I started proving at least the concept, it really kind of dawned on me that, because there were so many people that were excited about what I was doing and wanted to help out. And when we had the prototype, I'd take it down to like Stanford Business School, I'd bring it around different neighborhoods, and people would be lining out the door to use the simulator. So I said, wow, there's actually something here. And of course, just my entrepreneurial spirit, I was like, well, this could actually be a pretty cool business. And it was still a side hustle for a while, until I think what really got me to take it very seriously was when, you know, I kind of was able to get a couple of folks to join the team, like be my co-founders. And we talked about like the mission of the company. And I think what really, you know, got me passionate about doing this full time was realizing that, like, if we were successful, this could actually change the industry.
Right.
You know, we could bring this creation into neighborhoods that would just never have access to golf. And we could not just build a successful business, but actually affect the culture and, you know, the accessibility of the game. So that really got my blood boiling, and we kind of created our mission and never looked back. So now we've got 6 or 7 full-time folks. We're just going at it, all full-time working on it. You know, this is our thing.
We're talking to Adil Yang. He's the co-founder and CEO of DriveBox. You're in the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. And I know a lot of our listeners like to check out a website and sort of look along while we're talking about this. So I'll just say that Drive is spelled DRYVE, Box, BOX.com. So if you want to take a look at that while we're talking, I think you'll get an idea of what we're talking about. And one of the things that you'll see is a little section called Our Partners and Customers. And as innovative as this is, some of the most prestigious names in this old business called golf have contributed and are working with you. And I'm talking about the Genesis Invitational. I'm talking about the Olympic Club. I'm talking mm-hmm. about the Met Golf Association. Even the National mm-hmm. and the NBA Players Association is connected mm-hmm. to you. So this is kind of a myriad, a really broad representation of the type of appeal that you have. Again, when you look at this experience, talk about how people get to it and what they'll get when you get DriveBox. How do you do it? Let's say I want to do a DriveBox event like tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What would I mm-hmm. do? How do I do it?
Yeah, simple. You go on our website. You say book an event. You fill out a little form online, and we get you set up, you know, that day with if there's availability. That's for anybody. If you're a bigger company or a sponsor or someone who does major activations, of course, that might require a couple more conversations than typical bookings. But yeah, it's pretty simple. Just go to our website, drivebox.com.
And, you know, I don't usually like to talk about, you know, price when we get to these things, because, you know, people don't want to talk about price. You know, maybe it's not what you expected, sure. That sort of thing. But I have to do it now because, look, I when I saw the experience and I'm scrolling to the top and I knew what it was, I was thinking, okay, it's going to be cost prohibitive. It is not. I mean, we're talking about nope. this type of thing going for starting at $50 an hour. I mean,
oh yeah, mm-hmm.
it's insanely inexpensive, you know, for what it mm-hmm. is. And at $50 an hour, you know, when you split that by the number of people who can enjoy it during that hour, mm-hmm. it's practically nothing. Okay. I mean,
correct.
It's cheaper than a half dozen things I can mention off the top of my head. Going to a movie, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. going ice skating, you know, it's an incredibly affordable experience but also it's a state-of-the-art experience. I mean, and you're using state-of-the-art equipment, in here, no?
That's right, we are. We have the best golf launch monitors. We have the best, you know, electrical and solar technology. We have the best multimedia experience. So yeah, we really want to give people the best.
And at these prices and what the technology that you're bringing together in one place. So I see three main and I am actually auditioning for a job in the marketing department. Okay, no lie. Here I go. So you got the events thing going on where people say, hey, I want drive box here so everybody can have a good time. Boom. You line up the drive box to me. You put the drive box in one parking space. You hire that food truck to go in another parking space, which is a business you will probably open up later. I see you open the taco thing later. Okay.
Or partner with someone. Yeah, exactly.
There you go. So I see that coming. Okay. So that's one thing. Then you have the whole event thing because you have 20 plus thousand PGA professionals who are working in the United States. And I would say 9/10 of them can't afford to have full time a simulator. They don't have the space or money to do a simulator, TrackMan, the whole all of that stuff. You bring it at and put it at an affordable place. So now you can give state of the art lessons whenever you want to and make it cost effective, affordable, accessible for millions of golfers who are looking to take lessons in that way. Am I two for two on that one?
Two for two.
Okay. So those two, I think, are doing good. That's how you do good with this company. But how you do well. The way you can do good while you're doing well is when you said the accessibility and talking about now having the opportunity to take this technology and bring golf to neighborhoods and spaces that would be unthinkable to try to get an enjoyable, much less state-of-the-art golf experience into the neighborhood. Now you can do it. So because that part is the part that warms my heart, talk a little bit about that and how you plan to go forward with that.
Hey, warms your heart. That's exactly how we feel too, which is why, I have no business starting a golf company, right? I mean, my background is in medicine. I'm a physician. I've built and sold software companies, but to me, you know, it was that mission right there that you described as warming your heart. That's why I'm doing it. That's why my partners kind of left their lucrative careers to build this with us. And that's also why, you know, from day one, we said at a minimum, once a month, we want to take our entire experience and bring it to places free of charge, just to continue to like evangelize this mission. And I think, you know, a lot of foundations, organizations took notice, which is exactly what we want. We can't do this alone. And we want all the great organizations out there that are doing this to join us. And we're very fortunate that, you know, right away, Ace Kids Golf, they're based, you know, right here in the East Bay. They've been doing this for a while. They've got an incredible program. And we started taking the dry box out to let the kids in their program use it. From there, you know, we were introduced to others. We also started working with US Kids Golf, just again, donating our time, our resources, our equipment to give kids an opportunity to get into golf and use the state-of-the-art equipment to learn. And then this has actually been announced, so it's not a secret. We recently partnered with Cameron Champ Foundation.
Yeah.
So we have an official partnership with them. Again, doing the same thing. And they're big on bringing golf to inner city neighborhoods and improving access that way. And we do it for adults as well, for women, for folks that are, you know, in less socioeconomically advanced neighborhoods. Once a month right now, we're committing to that. And every box, we call them boxes, every box that comes off the assembly line, goes to a new market, is committed to doing something, giving back like this once a month. And that's at least us doing our part. And we want to accelerate that, you know, in the future as well.
I mean, it's amazing to me, the opportunity. It's like you see, I just see so much, especially in the urban environment where, look, I've been saying for years that the way you grow the game, where the game is popular, was really a grassroots sport. It's only that way when it's an affordable and accessible, and it only gets made that way when you have the support of local government, where you have public golf courses that are helpfully, that are partially or completely funded by the public because they understand the benefit that it brings. Now, in places where you don't have the land, but you have the people who understand the benefit, now you can bring the game there. So to me, it is a no-brainer investment to get this. I mean, you could set up 18 of these things and have a golf course side by side.
Totally true. We've talked a lot about that. I think one day that will come true.
it's just, I mean, look, the municipal, the government division, okay, I want to head up government sales, okay? I'm just saying right now, that's where it's
You're
that's,
hired.
that's where I'm going with this, okay? We're talking to Adil Yang. He's the co-founder and CEO of Drivebox here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host for now until I get this gig. I'm going to say that, look, so I got to say now where it is, because I know you're just getting started. Where are you now? What cities can you be found in?
So we are in Northern California, Southern California. And by Northern California, you know, we do our setup, they have wheels, they can travel. So we cover a large, we'll call it radius whenever we have a trailer. So we've got, we'll call it Bay Area. We've got LA, basically extends all the way down to San Diego if we want to. We can be found in Charleston, South Carolina, and as of now, today, Salt Lake City, Utah, or Greater Utah, for events as well.
Any announcements you want to make now about the upcoming cities you're going to be available in?
Oh well, I just did. Utah is our newest city that we added. We've got at least 5 more cities that we're hoping to launch this year.
Okay.
And many of them are being decided in the moment. So tough to say just because there's a lot of competing interests.
I understand.
But yeah, yep.
Understand. I'm in the breaking news business, so you know.
of course.
What we're trying to do. But again, with the growing availability and sort of the opportunity that's out there, I see the sky's the limit for the company right now. Let's just cut to the chase. When people want to get more information, I think I said it before, but I want you to say it. Where can we go for more information about Drivebox?
You can Google it and come to our website, drivebox.com. We have everything there, from how to book events, what we offer, how to join us, be a part of the team. There's lots of information there.
Outstanding. And I just want to say again, man, this thing is exciting on so many levels. And I know you're going to have a lot of announcements to come. So as things happen, as things are literally breaking news, please know that you have a soapbox and a megaphone right here where you can let the world know what
you're doing.
Really appreciate you spending the time and look forward to having you in the next time.
Wonderful. Thank you.
You got it. That is Adil Yang, the co-founder and CEO of Drivebox. I ain't lying, man. This thing to me, look, I've told you guys many times, I just happened to have received the first phone call that Topgolf made in the United States. It was a cold call to my desk when I was a marketing manager at the 3 golf courses here in the D.C. area.
No way.
And it was such, it was just so clear to me what was going to be. It didn't work out to have it at the national parks, but to me, this is the closest thing that I haven't felt that tuning fork since that call from Topgolf. So, you know, that's okay. Like
Thank
I said,
you. That's an honor to hear you say that. We're very excited.
It's my pleasure. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. we're going to take a break and pay some of our own bills real quick. And we'll be back with more golf and stuff. Stay with us. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Welcome back to the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. As I mentioned earlier, I was at the opening of the newest PXG store in Fairfax, Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C. I believe it's the 13th store with many more planned. Bob Parsons, the owner, and his wife come to every single opening. It is a festival wrapped in a party and with a thin candy coating of celebration. It is open bar, great food. Band is there. They have their own special performance of the national anthem. They bring the same guy and band to sing the anthem at every store opening. There were good friends from Wounded Warriors there. These guys are totally supported by Bob Parsons, who is a veteran himself. It was just a great scene. And after so much time, you know, during the pandemic and not having had events like this, it was especially great. But I was really grateful to get a one-on-one exclusive interview at that event with Mr. Parsons. So without further ado, here's my chat with the one and only founder of GoDaddy and the founder of Parsons Extreme Golf, also known as PXG, Mr. Bob Parsons. So, sitting here with, at the opening of the PXG store in Fairfax, Virginia, I think the first one here in the Washington, D.C. area, with the founder and CEO of PXG Golf, Bob Parsons. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here with you, Michael.
You know what? You seem genuinely delighted. You know, when I saw you when you walked in, and, you know, I see it with a lot of people who are in the business, and I can't think of a better business to be in, by and large. The guys seem kind of miserable, but you seem like, you know, you're genuinely happy to be here. It's nice to see.
You know, I do the stuff I love to do. And I love the game of golf and anything associated with the game of golf, people who play the game of golf. And to me, I look at it as just one big old group of happy people.
Yeah, that's the way I've seen it too. So I think we got that in common. So here at Fairfax, Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, big hotbed for golf. The tour just left here a week ago. Uh-huh. And now you come in. Arguably, this is as big an event, you know, for the area as the tour, you know, coming in. This is a big deal having PXG here. Tell me about the process of coming to D.C. How did you decide this was going to be your next move?
Well, you know, what we're doing, we are adding a, well, first let me step back. PXG is different from every other golf equipment company. Most golf equipment companies or sell through the large retailers like PXG, Superstore, Dick's, and on, Golf Tech. We sell only direct. So we have a completely different model. We have stores, but there are stores.
Right.
And they sell our clubs, our equipment, our accessories, and our apparel. And we think all of that is the finest made. For many, many reasons, to just try one of our shirts, all you gotta do is wear one. And I mean, you know, like most shirts, they use buttons, we use snaps.
Oh, okay.
And high-end snaps.
I did not notice that, because I saw some of the shirts, and I love the detail. I'm a detail guy, like that sort of thing. So I didn't notice that with the snaps.
And our clubs are the same way. Our clubs, when you hit our Gen 5 clubs, you will say, the first word is like, wow, oh my goodness, holy smokes. And it's because our philosophy has always been, you know, it's kind of like Ferrari. Ferrari builds a car, and they're concerned with speed and looks, and then they put a price on it. Well, that's what we do.
It's so funny that you said Ferrari just now, because as I was preparing for this interview, I don't know if you know the story of Lamborghini, how they came to be.
Very little.
Lamborghini was a guy who built tractors, and he did pretty well building tractors, so he bought himself a Ferrari. And he wasn't quite satisfied with the Ferrari. And he went to give them some suggestions about how it could improve, how it could be better and meet his standards. And they told him in Italian to go take a flying leap. And said, you know what? I'll just show you. Rather than ask you to do it, I'll do it myself. And it seems to me, as I was doing the research, that you have a lot in common with that guy. There's a lot of stuff out there. Instead of asking them to do something, you went and did it yourself.
100%, and I've always done that. You know, the first thing I can tell you is no one taught me how to tie my shoes when I was a little boy. I had to figure out how to do it myself. And to this day, I do it the way I figured it out as a little kid. Huh. It's faster than anybody else does the same thing. It is quick. I could never teach another individual to do it. They look at it and go, how always?
We'll have to get that on video at some point. It's on your channel.
Exactly. So, you know, what I do is I take and look for ways to accomplish what we want to accomplish, and I have paid no attention to how it's being done by the others. Hmm. And so the whole company was founded on the basis of, why don't clubs get better each and every year? And you know, and I talked to guys who work with other companies, and they told me, they said, the reason is we got budgets, we got price limits, we got a hit, we got time constraints, and, you know, given all that, we're doing the best we can. And then my thought was, suppose you didn't have to work under those circumstances. Mm-hmm. Suppose if you found a way that was going to cost you some money to make the sticks that much better, significantly better, why wouldn't you just do it?
Right.
And then get paid. So that's what we do. And that's also the reason why we market direct. When we sell direct, our prices are not rock bottom. Some of our clubs are. Mm-hmm. They're really true top performers. But our prices are in the affordable range, but they're in the affordable range because we sell direct and we don't have to give away a lot of the margin,
right.
Which is, you know, a story we hear again and again and again. But with us, it keeps a high-end company affordable.
And it's interesting because this is where he sort of started and made the name. And you know, I've been around in the business long enough to have been there when you started, and there was this buzz, and you know, part of the buzz was about just the price. You know, people were talking about the price more than were talking about the performance.
Right.
And there were some people, quite frankly, who were getting it, and it's like, well, why are you getting those clubs? Because I can. Okay, that sort of thing, but you can't last with that. You can't last just by having the price tag be the best thing about it. Talk to me as the founder, as you, the guy who built the principle of making a better stick. What makes it better, truly?
Well, what makes it better is, you know, every year, or not every year, but every, like, however long it is, we release our clubs when we have made it significantly and noticeably better, and can't think of another way to make it better yet.
So you're not working on that metronome of, like, you got to be ready for the PGA show, because that's what everybody's looking for. Get something ready for the stand at the PGA show.
Well, the PGA show, we don't go to the PGA show.
Right.
We're not present, and people, you know, and I have a lot of journalists ask me why, and I tell them we're not in that business, right? Because they're there to get their retailers. We are our own retailer.
Very good point.
Right. Yep. And so what we do is people will ask me when we release our clubs, they go, in what way are they better? And my response is usually, in every way. I mean, they sound better, they feel better, they launch higher, they go further, they have a bigger sweet spot, they look better. I mean, on and on and on. And if we see something that needs to change and we know how to change it, we change it right there.
Uh-huh. And so you are, tell me about your past in golf. Did you grow up playing the game? Where'd you get into golf?
When I grew up, I grew up in East Baltimore. My father was a very good golfer, and his home course was Clifton Park, and he would take me and my little brother there, and we would sometimes, he'd have his little clubs, we'd hit some balls on the range till we got tired, and then we'd chase rabbits, right, while he hit balls, and it was better than us having a video game,
yeah.
You know, because what Dad would do, he would give us each a big salt shaker full of salt. And he said, the way you catch a rabbit is you put salt on its tail. Right? So we would chase these rabbits all over hell and back with a salt shaker. And then, I mean, this went on for a couple years. And then when I got older, I said, Dad, how does putting salt on a rabbit's tail help me catch it? He goes, well, if you're close enough to put salt on the tail, you just grab it.
You got it.
It didn't tell us, son.
I like it. Yeah. Self-answering problem.
So I started like you did,
yeah,
playing in my 30s. and it was some guys I worked with, and we all took the game back up together again. It was a horror show for the first couple of years, and we all started getting better together, and then it went from playing golf Wednesday afternoons to Wednesday afternoons, Thursday mornings to Wednesday afternoons, Thursday mornings, Saturdays and Sundays, golf trips, or we would go to these conventions in Orlando, right? Never want to go to one meeting.
Just play golf the whole time. Play golf the whole time. And so your love of the game grew as you played. And you were playing, presumably, the good equipment that's out there.
Whatever was there back then. I seem to remember Wilson fire sticks were talking to town. Yeah. Callaway was just getting going.
Ping was a big deal back then too. Ping was out
Ping
there.
Ping was back there.
Karsten got
TaylorMade had the burner. Yeah. Bubble, and I mean, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's a very different world.
Very different.
And then, you know, we kind of migrated to where we are now. You know, and one of the things I noted was, you know, when I got to, when I was in my 30s, and, you know, as I started playing, and, you know, I'd get somebody's driver year after year, and it was so much longer. It was the same. It wasn't much different. It looked different. Right?
Right.
Maybe felt different, but, you know, once in a while, perform a little better, but not often.
Right.
So what we decided to do is our clubs get significantly better each and every generation. And with our Gen 5 clubs, we killed it with those things. I mean, they are better in every way.
See, this is a leap rather than a step. It seems like this one's a leap.
Well, every time we release the new generations, it's a leap.
Leapers. We're leapers. I like that. I got to ask, because you grew your business outside of the golf establishment. I mean, a lot of the guys, you know, sort of start in one company and then they'll go to another company. A lot of guys who start companies themselves had their roots in other companies. You started fresh. You know, you do things different. You start different. How are you generally received by the, I'm going to say, golf establishment? Do you think that they sort of give you the side eye, or?
We were greeted with raised eyebrows.
Yeah.
And you know, from both the golf establishment, the media, other, you know, most golfers. Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people. You know, I look at the comments after an article about it, and it, you know, typically say, I give them 6 months, I give them a year. These guys will never do that. The other thing. Well, that was in 2015 when we released our first clubs. Well, it's 2022 now. We're releasing Gen 5, and we are, based on Golf Data Tech's numbers, we're right with TaylorMade, Callaway.
It's amazing.
Us. We sell more than Ping, Titleist, in North America.
That's an amazing statistic. You started GoDaddy as well.
I did.
Are there any, what would you say are some similarities between those two entities and how you manage and have a vision for a thing and bring it into reality?
Well, actually, PXG is my third company.
Okay.
I started Parsons Technology, which was shrink wrap software. It debuted number 11 on the Inc. 5000 and fastest growing companies. GoDaddy was number 9, and PXG was number 123.
Wow.
And the thing that all those companies have in common is, realize this, there's two groups of people that you have to impart enthusiasm to. The first group, and the most important group, is your employees. If your employees don't have enthusiasm for what you're doing, you probably should do something else or make a change, right? And what do we know about enthusiasm? It's contagious. So when the employees are excited and that comes through to the customers impart it to each other, and off you go. We see that with sports teams.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, people ready to throw themselves through a window, whether their football team wins or not,
right,
and it has no impact on their life, but yet they're invested.
Right.
And what we try to do is we try to capture that kind of sentiment. And in doing that, we try to always, first of all, never do it to make money. If you do it to make money and you're saying, I want to do this because I want to make so much, you'll never make the decisions you have to make to be successful. Because the decisions that you have to make in order to be really successful, right, are that it's not apparent that that's going to make you money. It's apparent that it's not, right? But yet, over the long term, when you work to please your customers, give your customers what they want, to over-deliver at every turn, to do the right thing, you can't miss.
I mean, it sounds like you can pretty much manufacture and sell whatever you want to with that type of attitude. I mean, whether it's software, with websites, whether it's golf clubs, this is a strategy, a philosophy that translates to almost anything and everything.
Exactly, and what you have to do is you have to sell stuff that people want in a way that they do want it, right? Because right. People get bombarded with so many messages a day and so forth. So, you know, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, you're like, people say, well, the customer's not right. And you know what? The customer may not always be right, but the one thing you're sure of, customer's always the customer.
Right. Always a customer. Job title never changes on that one.
Oh, no.
I'm going to turn and ask, how much time do we have?
Yeah, a couple more minutes left.
Okay.
Like we talked about, doing another follow-up in the future, too, once you have a chance to hit the clubs.
Yeah.
Should be happy to do that.
Yeah.
Well, would love to do that.
Sure. For you, I'll tell you what, I like you the moment I met you.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. I mean, same thing. I saw that walking through the door. I was like, well, that's got to be the guy. Look how happy he is, you know?
There you go, man.
It's good stuff. And we talk about Clifton Park, too. I mean, I want to talk about your whole thing. I want to take a lot of time with you and talk about how you grew up, some of the places. I think you were probably out there when the Thornton brothers were doing their thing, right, out of Clifton Park.
Well, that I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are.
There's some pretty impressive like local golfers who came up through Clifton Park, that whole Baltimore golf thing.
Well,
so there's a lot to talk about.
I know I took a few beans in there.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of stories. I get a couple stories from Langston too. Yeah, I grew up. I was born just sort of like a 5 foot away from Langston, and yeah, I know some of those stories and some of those guys. Colorful is what you might say.
Yeah.
Well, ask just to close out and bring it back to this store where we're sitting, because this is impressive. You have a lot of beautiful people out there who are so excited about being here. It's interesting to me that the whole business right now is moving online and virtual, partially due to the success of GoDaddy and, you know, the online infrastructure that we've built.
Yes.
And yet here you are increasing your brick and mortar presence.
Well, you know, there's high tech and there's high touch.
Love it. High tech versus high touch.
You know, there's like to fit golf clubs online can be done, right? But you don't have the experience, you know, you don't have the deal where you're interacting with somebody, they're explaining things about the clubs and maybe pointing out things about the swing.
Yeah.
And you come away with a pair of shoes that fit you exactly, but they're golf clubs. You know, it's like, for example, you know, you can buy shoes on the internet, but, you know, you have much better luck if you go someplace to try them on.
Yeah, yeah, not me. I'm not one of those guys. I'm with you. We were just talking about how, you know, you have a suit made. You don't buy a suit and then adjust your walk to the suit. You know, get the suit made so it looks good on you the way you are, and it performs for you, not you performing for it. So,
100%.
I totally get that.
You know, I had one time. I said, you know, I put a thing up. I come on and said, I can't button this. She goes, you think you can lose some weight? I said, I think I need a bigger coat.
Just give me more fabric. Some snaps. And I got to ask, there's one more institution that you're associated with, which is the U.S. military. You are a Marine.
Yeah.
And I understand that your success, you attribute a lot of your success to the military. And I'm going to ask, what part of PXG, how do you express your military experience in PXG as a brand?
Well, the first thing I will tell you is that everything I ever accomplished, I owe the Marine Corps. When I went into the Marine Corps, I was a terrible student in school. Whether I passed or failed every year was a photo finish. And I failed the fifth grade. I pulled that off. Nobody could ever take that away from me. And when I got out of the Marine Corps and come home from Vietnam, and I worked as Bethlehem Steel for a year as a laborer. And then I went to the University of Baltimore in a program for veterans. I graduated, took accounting because it was the first major in the book, no kidding. I graduated magna cum laude.
Accounting.
I took the CPA exam, passed it the first time. I've never done any of that without the Marine Corps. I mean, these guys taught me discipline, importance of responsibility, how to believe in yourself, all those things. And for me, it made a total difference. And, you know, I'll tell you what, you know, we help out military causes, the Semper Fi Fund and Americans Fund. We help out Headstrong, others. I'm working on getting psychedelics approved for PTSD because it is the cure, all right? And as long as I got a dime, they got a nickel.
Wow, love that. I think that's a good place for us to end. But thank you so much for spending this time. This meant a lot to me. I've been really looking forward to meeting you for a long time, even before I knew you were opening the store here. So
I'll tell you what, you're going to be successful whatever you do. I know that just from talking to you.
I'm in there pitching, man, doing my best. That's Bob Parsons. I'm Michael Williams. We'll see you back with more of the 19th Hole.
You know, the feeling that you get when you're with Bob Parsons is that, you know, with all the people who are around him, with all the things that he has on his mind, it's just you and him in the room, and that you're the most important guy in the room. That's something that I try to do to myself when I try, when I'm interviewing somebody or even when I'm talking to anybody. I try to make it feel like this isn't just a stepping stone to the next conversation, that, you know, you're the person I'm talking to, and you have my complete and full interest and support. And that's the way he is too. So I really appreciate that. We have that thing in common. I genuinely enjoyed that conversation, and I look forward to having more in-depth conversations with him. We had a chance to talk more, but I want to get in a formal setting so we can get a really long-form interview so you can learn more about his life, his way of thinking. There's definitely a book in there somewhere. So, looking forward to having more Bob Parsons in the future. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th Hole. That's it, and that's all for this edition of the 19th Hole. I want to thank our guests, Adil Yang of Drivebox. Again, a great idea. I can't wait to get outside and inside of one of these things, and I'll let you know and take some pictures when I do that and report back. Also, the one and only Bob Parsons. What an interesting guy. I think that's the first of many for talks that we have. We kind of clicked, so I'm looking forward to hearing what else he has to say about anything else that he wants to talk about, quite frankly. If you want to see pictures from the PXG event, if you want to see stuff from Drivebox, if you just want to just look at stuff and scroll by it, I'm trying to get more into it, the social media thing, but I am there, and I'll be there more and more coming up. Where can you find me? On Twitter, it's Michael Williams TV, and on Twitter, it's Michael on TV. And see how I am? See how I need an intern. Can someone hit me up? I need an intern to manage my social media. Please hit me up on one of these social media platforms, okay? If you would like to do that or know someone who would like to do that. It is on Twitter, Michael on TV, and on Instagram, Michael Williams TV, okay? Please hit me up anytime. Operators are standing by. What else? Hey, I'm interested in hearing your takes on what I had to say about this Saudi golf tour too. You know, I say it like I feel it. You got some opinions on it? You got agreement, disagreement, you know, whatever. Arguments, agreements, announcements, let me know. Again, social media, you heard me. I'm ready to listen. Thank you as always for listening. We'll be back next week with another great show. In the meantime, go out, hit some balls, do your best to hit them straight. But even more important than that, don't count the days, make the days count. Michael Williams, 19th Hole.